This is Mae Brussel, and it's part two of World Watchers, program number 746. And I want to continue with this newsletter that Mr. Sutton has, because he is a renowned author, and he did work with the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. And he has a newsletter, and I just want to share some of his thoughts. He asked the question about sabotage. What would be the motives behind it? Who would do it? And like so many conservative thinkers, they write a lot of good material, but they leave a part out. They're totally unable to see how our own government sabotages ourselves, that it doesn't have to be an outside influence or a loner. So he has a question here with three hypotheses. Who had the motivation to sabotage the Challenger? Three hypotheses. One, a random nut. This is our Lee Oswald lies. Abnormal individuals, pyromaniacs, Tylenol affair, who get a kick out of creating a catastrophe. Well, you have to rule that out, because if the gentleman who made the rocket booster and the Challenger, the whole machinery of it, said that it's too cold to launch, it's catastrophic, we have these problems, we're going to have a disaster. If they fixed all the disasters, it still might be easy to sabotage, but then the people in charge would be taking care of it themselves. But the fact that they knew that all these hundreds of things were wrong and went anyway meant to me that they didn't want it to go up for one reason or the other. Then he lists terrorist activity, that the State Department had announced that we are in a low-intensity war. There's state terrorism, such as the downing of the Korean Airlines, Flight 007, or the Klinghoffer affair, or the Achille Lauer, and he talks about state terrorism. Well, he doesn't go into the fact that Richard truly piloted the Challenger the night that Larry McDonald went down, in the role of Larry McDonald, with Mr. Wigner and Eugene Wigner and Edward Teller and the Defense Department, and the use of McDonald to trigger off Soviet reaction when we went into their airspace. He still thinks of that as a terrorist activity, but not terrorism from the USA. So he leaves out the fact that we didn't take precautions, so you can't blame a nut. How would he know that we didn't take precautions, that there was no backup and all these various things? And he doesn't take into the fact that the United States are terrorists, even though they have a very good record of that. Then he cites the Soviet Union, who fears Star Wars, and it's a psychological warfare triumph because they launched their spaceship right after that. Well, we're having trouble with ours. And he asks, you know, what if one of these three, he only raises the three hypotheses. Now, he doesn't go into the fourth, which I've cited all along, which is to remove the bulk of the civilians from the space, to make it military, to use private space shuttles for experiments that could be genocidal. And when I said that private ships could make experiments, I'm talking about the kind of example that's locked up that Representative Markey can't get, that plutonium released could affect specific countries, but they're not telling us which ones. Have we targeted specific countries as warfare states? And are we dropping any plutonium from those ships at a certain time when they're re-entering, even, or blown up or whatever? Parts are released on countries and have less to do with the sun and the moon than they do as weapons. So he just brings up these three things. But the important thing is that he says the Rogers panel replaced NASA, that NASA was supposed to have the investigation, that they worked similar to the Kennedy assassination. He says the lack of discussion, a valid hypothesis, is intriguing. It reminds me of the Kennedy assassination, where 20 minutes after the event, they said there was no conspiracy, and the Rogers Committee said 24 hours after the event, after they got together, that there was no ice. They came up with that conclusion. He says the Rogers panel has no expertise in this kind of thing in science. It's headed by an establishment politician. You better believe that one. He said former Secretary of State William Rogers has no background in space, no interest in space or aeronautics. On the other hand, he's an internationalist attorney who's politically reliable to do what is expedient of the establishment. And think about this. Why a former Secretary of State? Why didn't they use a Secretary of Defense or a scientist to go into this? Because he does what the establishment wants. And then he makes a few more notes. He said another member of the establishment on Rogers Committee is David C. Atchison, the son of the former Secretary of State Dean Atchison, who's a member of the Skull and Bones. And Mr. Sutton's written three books on this, George Bush, and the very gory details of their experiences with skeletons and their secret society at Yale. Dean Acheson, the son of the Secretary of State, a member of the Skull and Bones with George Bush, whose initiates show up at significant events without fail. We have no concept of a link between the Yale attorney and the O-rings, but it's interesting that he's on this committee. Another member is Robert B. Hotz, H-O-T-Z, editor, former editor of Aviation Week and Space Technology. In appointing Rogers and Acheson, Ronald Reagan converted an engineering investigation into a political investigation with millions of competent Americans to choose among. Reagan took two pure establishment figures. The history of their Blue Ribbon committees is sad indeed. He repeats, look at Pearl Harbor, the Kennedy assassination, and Watergate. And Watergate, of course, ended up with Gerald Ford of the Kennedy assassination being appointed by Nixon, who was behind the Kennedy assassination, to become president of the United States. And, of course, these people, Rogers and Nixon, all of them are the very people dislocating the American Indians for uranium as of July 1986, to the point where they'll be shot and killed if they don't get off the land. So Mr. Sutton says the ink isn't even dry on their past history, and then the question comes out about their impartiality. And so he's questioning the Rogers Committee and all of a sudden how they come out with certain smoke. And he goes into the details of smoke that's there and then it isn't there and it appears at one time and then not another. And he figures out the temperature and the way that the committee worked. Pardon me, I hit the mic here. The way the committee worked in coming to their conclusions. And he feels that it is a total fraud, and he cites this. If you want to send for a copy of these newsletters, I don't know if he has individual copies. I'm sure he has. As I say, Volume 5, Number 1, March 1986, Mr. Anthony C. Sutton, P.O. Box 39850, Phoenix, Arizona, 85069. Now, a religious leader who passed away just recently, Mr. Armstrong, had a lot of publications in his, you know, he has the Plain Truth that's handed out the various grocery stores and newsstands, and you can subscribe for it free. And I sent for it because he had articles defending and praising the Bitburg visit of Ronald Reagan last summer. And he's close to Franz Josef Strauss, the strong man of Europe, who's a Nazi. Just before he passed away last year, Armstrong described spending a day with him, visiting him at and spending a day or two with Richard Nixon after he took office in 1969. And he's throwing around names in this particular article about the world of tomorrow, Mr. Strauss and Mr. Nixon. But the cover of the Plain Truth, June 1985, and I sent for it, and it's free. They mailed it right back to me. The cover is, Who Will Rule Space? Experts warn, who rules the space rules the Earth. This was June 1985, a month after Bitburg, and the whole issue is about ruling the space because you rule the Earth, and that's exactly what the Star Wars and this program is about. And part of blowing up the this Challenger or allowing this to go down, and I'm sure there were other factors that, in case it wasn't cold, that they could do, would be to replace it with very complicated laser-equipped satellites and particle beam satellites and turn the space activity into the warfare machine, which it was meant to have as its own. And as I would say, August of 1983, when the Challenger was used and Larry McDonald was Deep Six, the shuttle program had been long into military activity. But at that point, with the Star Wars in March 83, the president was introducing something new to the skies, new to you who haven't studied Project Paperclip or the Nazis during or after the war, and the intent to control the world by space. But this Mr. Armstrong, the religious leader from California, goes to Germany to visit Mr. Strauss and talks about if you control space, you control the world. That was just a little less than a year ago. 2 days after the shuttle went down, there was a directive from Caspar Weinberger, January 30th in the Houston Post, highest priority given Star Wars. And I keep repeating it because they didn't wait an hour to let you know that the long-range planning of Ronald Reagan of the Pentagon is the Star Wars, and that, you know, he doesn't even hardly mention the shuttle in this article, that they will put $2.75 billion into that. So $2.5 billion into one more shuttle doesn't get the priorities. If he gets his Star Wars, you can have the shuttle, and then they'll both be used together for, he said, exotic weapons, for lasers that can automatically shoot down Soviet missiles and so forth. So he wasn't grieving 2 hours when the announcement right off the bat was, hey, if you want anything else, Star Wars comes first. Now, shifting gears, going into another subject, which is important, there was a hearing just last week for advanced genetic sciences. It was on Tuesday, the 18th of March. I had to be in L.A., so I didn't go to the hearing. But the conclusion, according to the L.A. Times and the local papers, was test of altered bacteria delayed further. There's going to be a moratorium for 45 days to do further studies. And in that time, I want to write and cut myself off from a lot of things I'm doing and write about AGS and their links to Standard Oil, to Roman Haas, to IG Farben, to the International Combine, and see if I can put together a small equivalent of a paperback book and get one to each of the supervisors. This is hard, going between two cities, but this is what I'm working on. Sam Karras, the chairman of the Board of Supervisors, said he won't make a final decision until he gets the facts. But the facts come pretty easy if you know the cast of characters. You can't prove or disprove something, but if you know who's directing a film, if you know who's acting it, if you know who's composing an opera, if you know who owns a corporation, you have a much better way to guide what is going on, because you can't get in their minds to know, but you have some way that you can come to some conclusions. And it's important to put down their past track record and, again, bring up the question of why California, with international money, why does it have to be here? Why the secrets? What was their hurry to test it 10 months earlier? What else have they done? Where did they get all their power and their links to the very people that were during extermination during World War II and escalated the germ warfare and the biological warfare after and up to this point? If the plans to relocate and move Indians could move through the 70s and up to 1986, and the space shuttle had plutonium for countries that they won't tell you which countries, then why can't they have it for Mexican farm workers in Monterey County for the same reasons they're not going to tell you? Now, March the 11th, 1986, there was an article in the New York Times that's important, and if you have your pencil, write this down, or you might write to the Environmental Protection Agency or the people mentioned here. The article is on the pesticide bill. There's a new pesticide bill coming before Congress. The agricultural and chemical industry joined, for one of the first times, environmental and consumer groups for specific legislation on the use of pesticides. They've been fighting each other. Now they want it specific. The manufacturer of the pesticides would pay for testing of their chemical. The industry would pay $75 to $80 million to help the Environmental Protection Agency in testing it. They'd test federal insecticide, fungicide, and rodenticide. Act, this is called. Now, rodents, again, Zyklon B was for rodents. That was the extermination gas for rodents. That's what Mr. Bernard Goetz called the blacks in New York City, the sewer rats. I believe that rodents are terribly important, but the rodenticide as part of the insecticide. But keep in mind that the advanced genetic sciences got through somehow making live-altered bacteria be called pesticide. To go on to this article, it says there's more than 600 active ingredients, 45,000 pesticides. Pesticides often go on the market before adequate testing to see if they hurt health or environment, they admitted. And Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, who's not only on the Foreign Relations Committee, but evidently is on this, and Representative Berkeley Bedell of Iowa, Democrat of Iowa, and Dr. Jack Early, president of the National Agricultural Chemicals Association, are all working on this. And an Albert Meyerhoof, lawyer for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Now, they're making proposed legislation, and this is very important for advanced genetic sciences and the people behind it. Standard Oil and DuPont and Roman Haas, and over from Germany and Sweden and Belgium, the Max Planck Institute and so forth. We can't hardly check them out. Number one is a proposal. Pesticides registered under false or invalid data would be banned. Okay? Now, there are other suggestions. Communities around the pesticides would be assured their right to know. AGS didn't tell anybody, the Monterey County or anybody, that they were coming or where would it be or what they were doing, and they were putting live bacteria here. They would guarantee access to industry health and standards to check it. Three, they would prevent importing food from countries that contain banned pesticides. We have things in this country such as pesticides that cannot be put on coffee leaves where you would be, it's a carcinogenic, you'd get cancer, but they send it to Brazil or Colombia, then you buy the coffee beans from over there and get what you can't have grown in this country. You can't put it on, say, cigarettes grown here, but you can get it on coffee beans coming back to you. They would stop that, and they would inform people on the various ingredients that were there that cause health problems, and they would stop importing pesticides from the United States to foreign countries unless there was a warning or restrictions. We send food to them that is terminal and causes cancer, and we don't tell them. But getting back to the first item, pesticides registered under false or invalid data would be bound. Now, if you have a fountain pen and a 22-cent stamp and the inclination to do so, please, oh, it'll take 44 cents because you need two stamps. Please write to Representative Berkeley Bedell in Iowa, Senator Lugar of Indiana, and if you're not sure what I'm saying, go to your library and get New York Times, March the 3rd, 1986, on a pesticide bill, and say, how did advanced genetic sciences get live bacteria classified as a pesticide? That's the question. How did it get called a pesticide when it's bacteria? And that is a false data that has been given, and it should be checked out, and maybe we could stop that kind of spraying of live bacteria by falsely labeling it as a pesticide. Now, the newspaper this morning, Monterey Herald, had a story, Gene Firm Expects Environmental Protection Agency Slap. The Environmental and Protection Agency found out that unauthorized, they had done open-air testing on 45 trees in the Oakland area, and they think that they will not revoke their permit. They're sure of that, David Jones said. He's the financial officer that brings that money in from Europe. They won't revoke the permit. It will go on, but they will scold them because they have injected bacteria into trees, and they weren't supposed to do it. Now, not only did they do that, but they caused cankers in about 7 or 8 trees, and there's photographs of it, which is dangerous and which would affect the decision. But they're very confident and have a lot of political power and financial power. When you get DuPont and Standard Oil behind these firms, you know that they are pretty sure they're going to get through with this. But the company put this spray on the trees up in Oakland, and trees are not hothouses, and animals can carry this. And they released these mutant organisms in Oakland, California. But keep in mind, the office was set up by an attorney, Mr. Adams, from Connecticut, and he worked with Sullivan Cromwell, the offices of I.G. Farben and Allen and John Foster Dulles. So they go to a black community in Oakland. Mostly black people live there. And right outside of Berkeley, California, where all the radicals are that Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan hate anyway. And on the rooftop, they can spray these trees, because what difference does it matter if they get cancer? And so what to these people? It doesn't mean a thing. Now, the New Solidarity that I quote sometimes, and I do like their articles, some of them, I can screen out a lot of it, had a very interesting article just this last one, March the 17th, on Pat Robertson. The title is confusing. He says he's selling snake oil for KGB. Lyndon LaRoche thinks Pat Robinson's a communist, which is very interesting in how he aligns himself with State Department policies, similar to Henry Kissinger. And, of course, I think Kissinger is a walking Adolf Hitler. But the article is about Pat Roberts associating with people in the State Department who want d'entente with various people in the Soviet Union and are suspicious about the Star Wars and believe that the Defense Department is on bizarre grounds, that maybe we shouldn't be thinking in terms of war with the Soviet Union. And of course, Pat Robertson wants to be vice president, or has been promised it under George Bush. As I say, I heard the allegations that they were helping DeLorean get off in return. This was what he would get. But then the article tells him that he's a product of W.R. Grace, which we know. He was a roommate of J. Peter Grace at Yale. Again, the Yale gang clicking together. Very strong with Pat Robertson. He works as a troubleshooter for Grace's operations in Latin America in the 1950s and in Peru, helped open up the dope contacts that came in. He worked down in South America in the 1950s for J. Peter Grace before he took on his multi-billion-dollar narcotics traffic. But in the article, it goes on to say, Robertson shows his true colors. He's shown them before because he promotes Jeremy Rifkin. That's R-I-F-K-I-N, the fellow running the lawsuit right now to stop AGS. And he refers to Jeremy Rifkin, as being close to a group called the Club of Rome. In his book, like Enter Me and the Emerging Order, God in an Age of Scarcity, Rifkin preaches industrial development and material progress are evil that run counter to the will of God, and that the world's population should be drastically reduced to create a steady state economy. Now, I have to get Rifkin's book out and see if these quotations are right. He says that Pat Robertson defends Rifkin, and he meets with him. He's had him on his program. Rifkin is a member of this New Age conspiracy, which the LaRouches hate. But it goes on to say that Robinson insisted on having Rifkin with him to his 700 club twice. And he doesn't agree with everything Rifkin, the quotation says he's on the talk show, and he doesn't agree with everything Rifkin says. But he was with Pat Robertson and J. Peter Grace. Now, I called Jeremy Rifkin as soon as I heard about AGS coming into Monterey County, the salad bowl of the world. I called him in Washington, D.C. I talked about DuPont. I talked about Roman Haas. And he gave me the coldest shoulder. He is sort of the Mark Lane of the environment. Is he actually a cover like Mark Lane was for the Kennedy researchers? Is he the environmentalist that people go to? Because the people close to him here in Monterey County, and he himself, when I talked to him, he said, oh, send me anything you have about biological warfare, Roman Haas. I said, look, this is a biological genocidal weapon. You think he was just born a virgin birth yesterday that didn't know a thing that was going on, deaf and dumb? You know, it was like I assumed this man would, filing these suits to stop AGS, be aware of what was happening. And I got what I've gotten a lot of times, and it makes me just put this person on a question mark status. So I thought it was interesting that Rifkin is a guest to Pat Robertson, that he has written this book. I've heard about his books, but I've never read his quotation, unless it's quoted wrong. They have a quotation mark that the population should be drastically reduced to create, in quotes, a steady state economy. Now, that's, Bertrand Russell says, reduce population. There's too many people, and we need a plague to reduce it. And William Colby says there's 30 or 40 million too many Mexicans. And the Environmental Protection Agency had spent 100,000, oh, goodness knows how many more, but that specifically to try to give cancer to Mexicans. And so I wonder about Rifkin, and I'll go right away to the library or the bookstore and see what I can find out about him. I got out again that wonderful book, The Last Hero, by William. It's about William Donovan. It's written by Anthony Cave Brown, because in this book, towards the end of the book, it has the network of what is the Permandex operation that John Connally was part of that put Nixon to power and Reagan into power, and how in May of 1945, when the war was over, the British intelligence and the American corporations got together in New York and Panama and set up what they called as the British American Canadian Corporation. That was just within days of when the war was over, and this took all the top spies of England and United States and set agencies and corporations all over the world in South America and Asia, and offices at Rockefeller Center. Room 360630 Rockefeller Center was one of their addresses for intrepid British intelligence. And this book, The Last Hero, it's in paperback and hardbound. Tom Davis has them at Research. I can give you the address again where to get this book. It's a classic. It's similar to the book Spooks by Jim Hogan, pardon me, filled with information. But given the background of some of these people, I went back to this book to the period 1948, thinking of what was going on in this country. The war was over in 1945, May of 45. The corporation was set up, of course, ahead of time, but announced itself in May 45. But in this book, it describes Mr. Donovan of the OSS, who was a Knight of Malta at the Vatican, and J. Peter Grace is the head of the Knights of Malta, along with his outfit, and John Connally has worked closely with those Knights of Malta. and James Angleton. In 1948, Donovan was to find out just how weak the CIA had become. It had only been there 1 year, 1947, so he invited James Forrestal and a secret committee to get together with Dr. Vannevar Bush, Admiral Suhr, and General Gunther to study problems of defense. The excuse was defense against unconventional attacks if the Russians want to use biological weapons on us. Well, it has been documented over and again how the CIA used them in Cuba against Fidel Castro, poisoning the crops, how we want to give toxic poison to Lumumba, how we've used poisons for a weapon as an offensive weapon, and even again, the plutonium that could fall over specific countries they're lying about. So the CIA worked out a program of seven subjects for their committee. This is a year after it was formed from the OSS. One was clandestine attacks using biological weapons. The other was the delivery of atomic explosives. The other was attacks on individuals, key ones, or groups or installations. Another was the application of psychological warfare. The fifth was a group to study economic warfare. The sixth was clandestine attacks using chemical weapons. And the seventh was clandestine attacks using radiological weapons. Now, these were set up in 1948 with a committee to get active in these seven groups. And, of course, I decided, like overthrowing Allende, elected in Chile, they used the economic warfare. They used the killing of key individuals, many individuals. And there are a lot of elements that they could use to overthrow a country like Chile. Now, this thinking of genocide probably runs through the literature during and after the war more than we realize. And once you're clued into it, other books that you have and literature that you have makes more sense with things that you read earlier that hadn't made sense. And you wonder why your local governments, your supervisors, your local people are so pacifistic about, they don't matter, it doesn't matter about AGS, this bacteria here, why they're so peaceful about it. And I got some information, maybe some of you have it and don't know it. It's about a building in Chicago, 1212 East 60th Street. It's called the Public Administration Clearinghouse, PACH. It was set up by Rockefeller Money, first the National Municipal League, which trained people in public administration, pardon me, 1313 East 60th Street, training people in public administrations to go back to your local government to sit on your city council as city managers. They're not elected, but they're city managers who approve of things like, say, this spraying, or know about it, or pass the word down that it's safe or okay. And the city managers are trained in Chicago, and an organization put up by Rockefeller Money and Rockefeller Foundation, similar to the Council of Foreign Relations, has an international city managers and association, and one for 22 lobbies that affect us in the United States. And there were quotations in this material I got. One was about a Charles Edward Merriam, who was vice president, helped found the organization 1313 East 60th Street in Chicago. Just a couple of quotations that apply to AGS. He wrote a book, Charles Merriam, called New Aspects of Politics, published by Rockefeller and the University of Chicago. Control is likely in the future to reach a point where it may be possible to breed whatever type of human being is desired to have. We could breed morons and heavy-handed half-wits if we want them. We may breed strange creatures as beasts of burden and toil, symbolized in Capek's memorial play, R.U.R., dominated for hard toil. And I think of when AGS first surfaced, they said that this live bacteria could affect the immune system if you're weak or sick or have a disease. Are they breeding hard, strong farm workers and getting rid of the weak to do better work faster when the manual work is required? And then Miriam, in the book, The Role of Politics in Social Change, says you change people through diet, through glands, through medication, minor manipulations and stimulations. The strategy of control leans to the side of science. I don't have time to do more on this group set up in Chicago that manages the city level, but this is the thinking of one of the founders of the group, and this is what I'm afraid we're seeing with advanced genetic sciences testing it out here in Monterey County. But the time is up now, so I'll do more on this. I rushed through this very quickly. Get back to that and some very important stories for you next week. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel. Thank you again for books and articles that are pouring in. I'll use it all eventually. There's so much right now. But keep reading and sharing the information. And as I say, I'll be back with you next week.